I'm sorry. He excused himself from Ursula's request. It's just that the war has done away with everything. During the following days, he busied himself destroying all trace of his passage through the world. He stripped the silver shop until all that were left were impersonal objects. He gave his clothes away to the orderlies, and he buried his weapons in the courtyard with the same feeling of penance with which his father had buried the spear that had killed Prudencio Aguilar. He kept only one pistol with one bullet in it. Ursula did not intervene. The only time she dissuaded him was when he was about to destroy the daguerreotype of Remedios that was kept in the parlor lighted by an eternal lamp. "That picture stopped belonging to you a long time ago," she told him. "It's a family relic." On the eve of the armistice, when no single object that would let him be remembered was left in the house, he took the trunk of poetry to the bakery when Santa Sofia de la Piedad was making ready to light the oven. "Light it with this," he told her, handing her the first roll of yellowish papers. "It will burn better because they're very old things." Santa Sofia de la Piedad, the silent one, the condescending one, the one who never contradicted anyone, not even her own children, had the impression that it was a forbidden act. "They're important papers," she said. "Nothing of the sort," the colonel said. "They're things that a person writes to himself." "In that case," she said, "you burn them, colonel." He not only did that, but he broke up the trunk with a hatchet and threw the pieces into the fire. Hours before, Pilar Ternera had come to visit him. After so many years of not seeing her, Colonel Aureliano Buendía was startled at how old and fat she had become and how much she had lost of the splendor of her laugh. But he was also startled at the depths she had reached in her reading of the cards. "Watch out for your mouth," she told him. And he wondered whether the other time she had told him that, during the height of his glory, it had not been a surprisingly anticipated vision of his fate. A short time later, when his personal physician finished removing his sores, he asked him, without showing any particular interest, where the exact location of his heart was. The doctor listened with his stethoscope and then painted a circle on his chest with a piece of cotton dipped in iodine. The Tuesday of the armistice dawned warm and rainy. Colonel Aureliano Buendía appeared in the kitchen before 5 o'clock and had his usual black coffee without sugar. "You came into the world on a day like this," Ursula told him. "Everybody was amazed at your open eyes." He did not pay any attention because he was listening to the forming of the troops, the sound of the cornets, and the voices of command that were shattering the dawn. Even though after so many years of war they should have sounded familiar to him, this time he felt the same weakness in his knees and the same tingling in his skin that he had felt in his youth in the presence of a naked woman. He thought confusedly, finally captive in a trap of nostalgia, that perhaps if he had married her, he would have been a man without war and without glory, a nameless artisan, a happy animal. That tardy shudder, which had not figured in his forethought, made his breakfast bitter. At 7 in the morning, when Colonel Gerineldo Marquez came to fetch him, in the company of a group of rebel officers, he found him more taciturn than ever, more pensive and solitary. Ursula tried to throw a new wrap over his shoulders. "What will the government think?" she told him. "They'll figure that you've surrendered because you didn't have anything left to buy a cloak with." But he would not accept it. When he was at the door, he let her put an old felt hat of José Arcadio Buendía's on his head. "Aureliano," Ursula said to him then, "promise me that if you find that it's a bad hour for you there, that you'll think of your mother." He gave her a distant smile, raising his hand with all his fingers extended, and without saying a word, he left the house and faced the shouts, insults, and blasphemies that would follow him until he left the town. Ursula put the bar on the door, having decided not to take it down for the rest of her life. "We'll rot in here," she thought. "We'll turn to ashes in this house without men, but we won't give this miserable town the pleasure of seeing us weep." She spent the whole morning looking for a memory of her son in the most hidden corners, but she could find none.